Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today comes with 3 decades of experience. So usually, you know, I have people start talking, oh, I've been in it a long time. And I say, how long is this? 5, 6 years. So this guy has 3 decades and he doesn't look a year older than maybe 32. So he started at the age of 2. So, you'll see in a second. So he's a former manufacturer's rep, and it's for businesses representing 300 plus brands. And also he built several agencies. So he knows about building stuff. Today he's the VP of digital commerce at Quickfire, which is a small digital commerce marketing agency. And he leads the Amazon operation. So when we talked, I said, so how big is your team? And he says, no. We believe in personal attention, small. We don't want to make the customer a number. So I handle everything. And he even edits his own podcast. So to that extent. So you're dealing with a real hands-on guy. So when he's not working, he's a hobby holic. And he plays the drums, the golf. He's a sports announcer in high school football and the host of Always Off-Brand podcast. So with that, everybody meet my guest, Scott Ashman. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you very much, Nick. I'm a co-host. I want to make sure that's cleared up, a co-host of Always Off-Brand. I don't leave Summer Jubilee and Haley Brucker out, but thank you very much. All of that is true.
Well, co-host or not, you edit your own podcast.
I do. No? I am the producer. I book the guests. We talked about that. I do a lot of stuff. Same thing with you. I edit it. I enjoy it. I do all that stuff. So it's been a labor of love. It's been great. But thank you so much for having me on. Just the name of this podcast is intimidating to me. It's just humbling.
Oh, well, it is a truly humbling podcast in a way that we share how humble we had to be dealing with Amazon, right? Because Amazon will knock you over the head and then bring you to the floor only for you to have the resilience and the knowledge and everything else to be able to get back up. So if that is not humbling, it's I don't know what it is. And I know I suffered it, I suffered through it. Suffered with other people and continue to. So in my book, anybody who is doing this is a legend. So that's why. So it's an honor to have people come to the show and share their stories. So it's a great, and I have a great time. So now you have almost 3 decades of experience in all aspects of running a business. And now you are in, and first of all, digital business versus conventional business. You've done it all.
Yeah, and I had first 20 years was basically in retail.
Yeah, so, I mean, that gives you the kind of experience where you have a working model that you know in digital world because things are no longer touch and feel, but you now know how to go about it. So what can you share with our listeners without making things complicated so that they understand how they are running their business and, more important, where their business is going?
Oh, my goodness. How long do we have? I've seen people win the battle and lose the war, Nick. That is the basic thesis, premise, and summary of 17 years plus dealing with, we're selling to Amazon and selling on Amazon. And that sums it up.
So winning the battle, losing the war means every day when they go to bed, they feel that they've done something, they've accomplished something during the day, or they put out fires or whatever the case may be. As yet, they're not making money. And they never have any money in the bank, right?
Yeah, that's hopefully you try to avoid that as long as possible. But the reality is, getting into it, every situation is different. That honestly, yeah. They don't understand the macroeconomics and the true profit and loss of their Amazon business until sometimes, unfortunately, you and I have seen this, we talked about it, it's too late.
Yeah. By the time you ask yourself the question, so the first thing that I'm hearing from you is, and the functional word there is the true P&L, right? So everybody makes those calculations when they are in the process of planning. So, okay, if I'm going to buy it for $12 a piece, then I pay so much freight and whatever landed, it's $15. And then they price it certain way, right way, wrong way, doesn't matter, they price it. But when the rubber hits the road, numbers start to settle somewhere else, right? So what is it that you're looking at to calculate the true P&L? That's the first point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the
second point, what comes after that?
What comes after the P&L?
Yeah.
So, I mean, people process and cash flow, maybe not in that order. I think people are first, but process and cash flow, that is the oxygen and blood for any business. And that is what is critical. So if you understand the key metrics to understand your actual profit and loss, then you're forecasting how to forecast not only from an inventory, from a product flow, but also you have to inventory and budget your sales and your spend and your expenses. So budgeting is critical, forecasting on every level. And then that kind of the third part there, Nick, is into your cash flow and understanding how to forecast cash flow, how to maximize cash flow, how to actually understand cash flow, especially on an Amazon business, because a lot of Amazon businesses are a cash business. They run and generate off monthly cash flow. So if you don't understand all of that and can have the ability to quickly analyze that and understand where you're going and see trends, that's when, unfortunately, trap doors open up and you fall through one and you wake up and you go, oh my God, I thought I was doing great. I've done all these revenue. You see on LinkedIn everywhere. I'm 7-figure, 8-figure, blah, 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 all this other stuff. But nobody tells you if they're actually making any money.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I've heard three things. First of all, what is your true P&L, which means do you really know how much money you are making? What is the, in technical terms, liquidity you are generating? Liquidity being by the time you paid out everything and deducted from your sales, how much is left? Net profit, liquidity. So, and then how can you, because of course you want to be doing that every day, every week, every month. That means being prepared. In order to be prepared, you have to have projections, right? So how do you prepare your projections? What are some common real life methodologies to make those projections without getting into complex stuff? And then the third one is the toughest one. And that's where I always used to get stuck on. I would easily make my P&L projections and then even translate that into some kind of a balance sheet, so to speak. But when it came to cash flow, I would always struggle because now it's pulling data from all over. So planning your cash flow, how do you go about it? Why is it different than P&L and balance sheet? It's very simple. P&L looks at, okay, you sold 10 pieces, you bought 10 pieces, you spent so much selling those 10 pieces. How much? But you're carrying inventory, right? So when you carry inventory, your cash is tied up. So how do you project that? What is the best, right?
Yeah, do you want to start there?
Yes. So for my listeners, that's what we're going to cover today. So you're going to hear from a real business guy how to have a practical approach to calculating your profit and planning for it and projecting your cash flow. and what kind of cash you need in order to sustain that operation. So let's dive right into first P&L. What is the calculation of true P&L?
Start of all, you mentioned this in the beginning as far as your example of I buy it, my landed cost is this, and I retail it for that. But people will have to understand, and I've been doing this, like I said, for a lot of time. I can almost, no matter what product you give me, I can get really close to predicting what their landed cost is based upon the retail. So if you don't start off with an 80 plus gross margin, then there's going to have to be some other factors. Going to have some volume factors, got to be have to think as far as selling on Amazon with the increased cost, advertising, all the other stuff. You got to be at 80 plus and maybe have a blended margin by the time the end, because you're going to go on discount and the volume. But if you don't understand, like you said, that is the first thing, but people don't know this. Sometimes they don't understand what to put in all those buckets. If I start out how to start at $39.99 and go backwards to make sure that I'm at 80 plus gross margin. So retail math is something somebody should Google and look on YouTube so they can understand this. If you're not from retail or don't, you know, this is somewhat new to you. So that's the beginning. The second is that you have to understand what's above the line and below the line. And a lot of accountants talk about this and CPAs. That is my variable cost, what kind of changes, then the COGS or the cost of goods sold, right? This is the fixed prices. No matter if I sell 100, 1,000, I have these fixed costs. That's what's going to cost to sell that one unit. So people have to go into this and understand that, because in the Amazon world, whether you're dealing with an agency or yourself, Amazon is, they suck at giving you this information in a really clear, definitive way. So, do you agree, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, look, Amazon, still to this day, the real important things, they don't want to share with anybody. They're one of the most secretive companies. Recently, they seem to be sharing more data than before, but still not enough. Yeah, and as far as, you know, I tell you what my biggest beef is. So this is what happens. Amazon sellers, they complain about Amazon does this, Amazon, how can they do this? And listen, you're playing in their backyard. Okay? You don't like it, get up and leave.
100%. Otherwise,
suck it up and shape up, right? So this is the reality. Now, why am I saying this? I'm saying that because they are giving Amazon a hard time, but they don't have their own books in order. So
that is true.
What right do you have to talk about? Amazon is not supposed to give you any data about what kind of a business you are doing. So they give you your settlement report. So that's it. Run with it. So you should be able to do it. So that's the way I see it. But, you know, that's where things get complicated, because you need systems, you need the knowledge and everything else. And so that's how it is. So, but what I want to do, Scott, is let's break down for a retail operation the line items. And then you made a remark about above the line and below the line. And that's a very important definition. So above the line, explain what above the line is and what below the line is.
Above the line is basically your what I talk about that are variable costs that can change from month to month. These go in and out. This leads back to the cash flow analysis and kind of projecting cash flow. These are the costs that either you have a contractor on doing this, and those costs aren't the exact same every single month. To sell to for a seasonality business. So I'm going to do double what I normally do. Well, those variable costs could increase because I either have to hire more contractor time or various reasons why it's going to cost me more. So usually above the line is labor, is people, sometimes can be, because it goes up and down. So anything that is not exactly steady, again, no matter, that's not tied to the units sold, okay, is above the line. So no matter what, it is not tied to the one unit I sold. Below the line is, it doesn't matter. You have that same expense every single month, whether you sell one unit or you sell two units or 1,000 units. That's your fixed cost. A lot of them call fixed costs. Okay? Does that make sense?
So, okay. Just for clarification, below the line is whether you sell one piece or 100,000 pieces, you have the same cost, like your rent, your salaries, your insurance, everything else. Okay.
Exactly.
So that's below the line. So I would call those overheads, right?
Yes, your overhead, correct.
Your overheads. So you call those below the line. And above the line, you have things related to the number of units you sell. For example, you sell 100 pieces this month, then you have 100 times whatever the price. You sell 10,000 pieces, 10,000 pieces times whatever the price. And of course, now, what are the costs? Amazon fee that you pay?
Yep.
FBA fee?
Yeah.
You pay? You probably ramped up your advertising.
Yep.
Your advertising, your social media.
Yep.
You know, all those bits and pieces. And those vary based on this. So those you call above the line.
Yes.
So that's the first distinction you're making. Recognize if you have one tier right at the top, one band, that's your sales. Then comes below the sales, above the line, your variable. And then below the line, your overheads.
Correct.
And then you deduct all that, then whatever is left is what you have, right?
If that you is are right. Like, and so that's where people get caught up, is they look at the reporting, which again, Amazon makes it very challenging. You have to look at this, like you said, your summary. I like in the payments, actually just changed this, by the way, how you get to the summary report. That's my macro look to see what my expenses versus income are. But then to detail that out, you have to go into order transaction. You have to really download and do some serious spreadsheet moving and shaking. And that's fine. We all have to do that. But when they look at their advertising and they look at their either their ACoS, which again, I don't use because I think it's a made up term that Amazon created. It's one of many. And I think it's terrible and shouldn't be used. That's just my opinion. Return on ad spend has been using in digital advertising for, I don't know, 4 or 5 decades, maybe. I don't even remember how many. So I look at return on ad spend and I look at total return on ad spend, which a lot of people talk about. Kind of attributed to the tacos situation, but also the percentage of spend to sales. We talk about how to build out like a normal spreadsheet of P&L, but people look at one band of information and they think they're making money because they have not gone back and don't have the discipline to add every single piece that costs to sell in there. And the other thing on the advertising, which is a big topic, Nick, right? Everybody's just trying to control advertising. It's getting so competitive. And I have to remind people all the time, your return on ad spend, your total return, those are gross numbers, meaning you haven't taken out everything. But people hire agencies and people hire us and everybody, I want a 3 ROAS. I want a this, that, I want a this, that, this. This is my tacos. This is what. You know what? Any agency worth their salt, they can deliver that any day of the week, especially on a percentage of spend. So people need to take that. And that's the total. That is a gross number. So from a seller, and if you have to figure out what your net ROAS is, what is your, take out the cost and, you know, where can I live? So what my clients, I go, what's my ROAS? Oh, it's this. I go, you figure out the net. And you tell me the basement, and that's where we're gonna live and die by. And then depending on the product, you have long lifetime value and blah, blah, blah. But that is one critical thing. And if I can just add one more thing, it is very scarce, Nick. It's scarce. And when I look at Amazon businesses, if you were on sale for a particular period of time, and now since the coupons aren't as popular and the strike through prices and all this other stuff, again, they make it really hard to figure this out. You have to put the funding that you spent to sell those units. So if I'm discounting 20% and I sold 100 units, what is the cost? That has to go into your total marketing spend. Otherwise, your ROAS, your total return on ad spend, your tacos, it's a fool's errand, Nick. It's you're going to it's misleading. And that's when you end up with the P&L and you go, oh, I did really well. Well, what was the cost? And this is really important, everybody. Listen to this. Ask yourself, what was the cost, total cost, to get that sale? If you don't understand that, you're going to wake up and it's going to affect your cash flow. It's going to affect everything else in the health of the long term of your business.
I want to introduce Cellcor to all my listeners. As you all know, it's essential to add another selling channel to Amazon. Even though Walmart is the natural addition, you need the know-how to hit the ground running. Cellcor is a Walmart-approved agency for launching and scaling Amazon brands on Walmart, and even getting you into Walmart stores. They manage over 400 brands and 100,000 products. They were kind enough to offer my listeners a free comprehensive audit and a $500 statement credit. Visit www.cellcor.co/legends and mention Amazon Legends to activate this offer. But do it quickly because this offer may not last long. www.cellcor.co/legends. So, okay, you said quite a few things that I want to clarify for myself and also for our listeners. So first, the last thing you said about if you're selling an item at a discount, you should book the gross revenue as your sales, and then post the discount you gave on that item to your, as you call, over the line, because for some orders you gave that discount, for the others you didn't. And then why is this important? It's important because when you compare your ad spend against your sales, you now have a better understanding of what you would achieve, but then you would need to add your discount on top of the ad spend. So that's where you get to see the true picture of what that advertising is costing you. Now, why is this different than just comparing your ad spend against your net sales? Why is that different?
Because you got to take out, if it's truly giving you what it costs to get those sales, then it's the same. What I'm looking at, again, in retail, we call this a marketing spend. So I total up my marketing spend, meaning that's my ad sales, that's my discount. If I do a 2-for-1, any type of promotional activity I do has to go on that same spreadsheet, because at the end of the day, it's going to affect your gross return on ad spend. It's going to affect your gross percentage of spend to sales, which people call tacos. And it's going to affect all of those metrics, which is what I live and die by. And every business should be looking at all the time. So the frustration is, and this is when CFOs get involved, because they ask these questions, because this is how they think about things. The marketing department, the e-commerce department, or the seller, it doesn't matter. They're building these things and they're jacked because they had a huge month. Their ROAS was great. Their total ROAS, their organic plus their ad attribute, they are flying high, right? But they were off 30%, Nick.
Yeah. Well,
and they didn't put it in the report that they sent to the management, to the CFO or whoever, the bank, I don't care. They said, you had a phenomenal month, but you know what? How much did you fund the 30% off? How many units did you sell at 30% off? Oh, I don't know. Well, yeah. Then I don't really have the information I need to determine whether this is a profitable month or not, or a time period.
So I can see there are two scenarios there that automatically would be part of the consideration, which will then lead to your forecasting and your projections, frankly. So what you are saying is, if we sold one item, I mean, one item being one SKU, and we sold that SKU at a discount all the time, at the same discount rate all the time, then this is a non-issue. Right?
This is easy.
But
easy.
Life doesn't work that way, right?
No.
So So we are giving discount for 2 weeks. We are giving really heavy discount for 3 days, and then we are removing the discount. So what you are looking at is a blended picture at any point in time. So what you are saying is, if you establish your expectations for ACoS, TACoS, whatever, yeah, based on that blended number, you won't know what you're doing.
You won't know. So that's why we budget our funding. We budget, again, we have a forecast to actual. We work on these businesses and we do these P&Ls and leading into our projections, our forecast, and our cash flow. I have a forecast to actual, and I have that for many years because I'm looking at historical trends, and I'm also want to know, I budget last year at September Labor Day or whatever the sale is, we sold 10,000 units at this discount. Well, this time we had to go 5% deeper on the discount, and I project we're going to sell about the same, maybe a little. And that dictates what my spend can be, what my sales goals can be. It generates everything.
Right. So this is such an important thing to easily overlook and then get hurt. So what that means is, in practical terms, when you're preparing, you download your Amazon report. What this means is, this is what you need to do. You need to add the discount that you've given onto the net sales and then make that your top line.
Yes.
Number one. Number two, just below that, you must have two line items. One is discount. The other is your ad spend. And then the total. The net comparison of the total of the ad spend plus discount compared to your total sales, not gross sales, will be the same if you deduct the discount from the gross sales.
Yes.
But you know how human psychology is and also how seasons are. Maybe this year when you are planning, this leads the discussion to now forecasting, is you decide, you know what, we're not going to give the 20% we gave last year. Then where does that bring us? So that's why it's important. And as you run tests, SKU by SKU or periodically on everything or whatever the case may be, then you will have a whole different picture coming out of this, right?
Absolutely. And this is, you start with the unit economics, right? Making sure we have a very simple spreadsheet that just has my landed costs on one side, and we just add everything up, your FBA fees, your estimated freight. I mean, the whole nine, just to get a starting point of, am I going to make any money? And then if you put in I know I can put in a budget of 20% of spend, 20% marketing to sales. Okay, boom, that comes off the line. It tells you very quickly if you're looking at a different an item and you have some competitive information to understand what you're really going to sell it at. You know, you're not going to sell it at 49. The market really is at 39 or what have you. That's the first step we talked about. And then you go in and just, I cannot tell you how many, I don't care what size of business it is. It could be largest business, it could be Fortune 500. The EVP of e-commerce, the marketing, the sell, they don't add in these true marketing costs to get the sale. They're just excited to get the sale. And then they get their butt kicked when the finance team comes in and asks some really tough questions, and then they have to do all this work.
Well, you know what that finance team looks like when you are a hardworking seller?
It
looks
you.
Like the bank, the bank account, you know, having very little
it
money.
Is.
You've got the vendor bill due in a week's time. So it's a real problem. Now, let me give you this scenario, which is so easy. You know what the issue is? The issue really is not the discount, not the calculation. The issue is the price people set, because it is already wrong because they want to make it cheap and everything. So I give you this example, very simple. So take your model of 80% of the sale should be after you pay for the merchandise. So it means that you're paying 20% of each sale to buying the merchandise. So Let's say that your price is $50. 20% of that is 10, right?
Yeah, I went to Arizona State. Don't make me do hard math, Nick. Come on now.
No. It's $50, 20% is $10. So you bought it for $10, you're selling for $50. Now, that's 20%, right? So would you agree an advertising spend of 15% over gross sales is a fairly good number to achieve, right?
Reasonable.
Okay, 15%. Now, we spend 20% on the merchandise, add 15, we are up to 35. You pay 15% to Amazon, right? So now we are up to 50%. We pay FBA fee. That varies depending on how big compared to the price point. But let's say that let's be very aggressive and very optimistic, say 10%. Okay. Now we are up to 60%, right?
Yep.
60% gone.
Yep.
Out of the $50 sale. That means $30 gone already. 60% yep. of yeah. If you offer 15% coupon, which is what everybody does, right?
See you later, Nick. See you later.
So that's the calculation that you want made separately. You want to show $50 sale, 15% of that, $4.50, 15% discounts. Then another 15% advertising spend. And then your FBA, then Amazon commission, and then whatever is left is really what is left. But I will argue with you. Wait, there is more, right? As they say.
There is more. Because I haven't even done below the line, as you said. We haven't even put the fixed cost in.
No, forget. Before you get to below the line, forget it.
Okay, argue with me.
But above the line, we still have line items. Let's cover those. What else should they consider?
Well, so we're not talking about if you have any storage fees. You have, first of all, if you're fulfilling out of a third-party logistics or your own warehouse, those are fees associated to bringing in the goods, labeling the goods. There's a cost there, right?
Right.
There's Amazon's fees, which again, depending on, they can be negligible, but you got to factor those in. They can be a small percentage you have to take into granted. If you have any contractor costs, I don't know, either agency costs or advertising, what have you, softwares that you're using to run all of this stuff.
Well, they are below the line, right?
Yes. So sometimes, percentage of spend, they go up and down.
Yes, they do. Categorically speaking, I want to cover what's above the line, because above the line is, it has its hand in your pocket for every penny that comes in. Below the line is a different way to manage it. Even though with inflation now, the interest rates and everything, they also vary, but compared to what's above the line. So what is the elephant in the room that's above the line?
I don't know. Now you've got me. I'm startled now. What is the elephant in the room? Now I feel like a dunce.
Refunds.
Oh, yes. The refunds. Yes.
Right.
Yes, I was thinking about, so there's all kinds of other fees. So it, in the seller sense, it's my God, it's either storage fees, there's refunds. That's a big point. The returns and refunds are massive.
Yeah. So because that's another calculation. So when you go to, everybody, unfortunately, the only thing that's certain is debt and taxes, right? So everybody knows their tax return. And on the tax return, it says net sale, net of refunds. You don't declare. That's the opposite of what you must do. Because if you have refund rate of 8%, that has to be below your gross sales.
Yes, great point.
Because remember the calculation we made. Said, okay, 20% goes to merchandise, 15% Amazon, 35. 15% advertising, 50. Then 10% FBA, very generously. Now we're up to 60.
Yep.
And we gave 15% discount, right? 75. let's say that 8% refund, 83.
We've lost money, Nick. We have lost money on this enterprise.
By the way, this is if you start at 20% to buy the merchandise. God forbid you're buying it at 30%. Now you've got no money. So this is the point you were getting at about true P&L, right? And but okay, everybody says, sure, of course, we factor in the refund. Are you doing it as a percentage band under your gross sales? Are you grossing up your sales? That's the entire point you're making, right?
Yes, and you're right. I tried to get out of apparel and some other high refund. That's why it didn't come to mind quickly, Nick. I spent so many years doing it. I'm like, I don't want to deal with this return thing. This is a nightmare. Because you're absolutely right. And also in your budgeting and your forecasting, which we're about to talk to and kind of go through, you have to factor this in. So that's yes, it's a great point. We're losing money. I mean, we got to find new suppliers. We got a lot of work to do, Nick, on this enterprise. We're toast already. We're just on paper, it's not looking good.
Yeah, even starting at 20% gross. So,
and I know okay. A lot of sellers who actually, and I used 8%, they want to go at 90%, 95 or what have you. So that's the retail. You have to say retail. Now, the old department store trick that's been around for 260 years is you double sticker. We do this all the time. It's normally $69.99, but you know what? It's $59.99. The everyday price is this, yet we know that we're going to be promotive, right, for X amount of days and seasons, so we want to set the standard here. If you can do that competitively, good for you. That's a great way to do it, and it'll help the cushion of this exercise we just went through on your P&L.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how effective. So there is a furniture store that advertises where I am locally. And I went in there, and there's also another one. They are right across from each other.
Yeah.
And the other one was running a special. So they were advertising. And so I figured, okay, let's go check it out. So I go in and they have their specials running. It's only available for so long. And then I went to the other one. Has better prices. So I asked, are you running any specials? And they said to me, we're running a special every day, every day. Our price is special every day. So now it's no longer that special for me.
Okay.
So that was the perception immediately I got. So I don't know if it's a good idea.
But you bring a great point. But this is true in retail, the history of retail. There's everyday on sale, everyday value retailers. And then they got sales going. JCPenney built out, which, you know, sad, their debacle and going out. But they had the value pricing. You could trust JCPenney because it's the best. Now, think about Amazon. Most people, I don't know, Nick, if you agree, the consumer trust that they are getting the best deal on Amazon is pretty high. Don't you believe that innately until if they want to go look around? So this is a game that has been played forever, and it's not right for everybody. And I'm not suggesting it, but it's one thing. The point of this story, the point of the furniture is you got to understand your basement, net, 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 what your retail price has to be and where you can go and where you can stretch it. Now, I jokingly say this, inflation is one of the greatest marketing, you know, scams of this era, because a lot of people are taking it and just getting it. Good for them. I tip my cap. But this is your retail prices and how you price things are so critical, obviously, with the price matching. And if you're trying to face an Amazon 1P, I mean, there's so many dynamic and repricers again and all those things.
Yeah.
Understanding what your true and your best, your median after all the year and seasonality, what your total retail dollars is, that is critical to understand in this forecasting.
Yeah. I mean, look, when you factor in the reprices, which means the price is going up and down, and frankly, some people may say, well, I have my own private label. I don't change my price. Well, you should look into it because maybe you're leaving money on the table. So, I mean, there is technology actually out there, a company called 4C, founded by a good friend of ours. that's what he does. He reprices private label products because he doesn't want to leave money on the table. So when you have a price that's going up and down, and you have different discounts being granted at different times, at different rates, you no longer should be calculating your profit.
Correct.
By using net sales and compare against your ad spend and the rest of the line items above the line. You must factor those in, right?
As two seasoned people, there's a very old term that I think is so useful today. And it's testing. Charge what the traffic will bear. And sometimes you don't know what the traffic will bear. And I think it behooves everybody to try and make reasonable tests with patience. Don't do it for a day and think, oh my God, and panic. You have to look at this and see what the traffic will bear.
Yeah, exactly. And anybody doing this, do not drop your price on Amazon and then expect to bring it back up, because Amazon won't let you. You will lose the buy box. That's another thing to keep in mind. If you ever need to increase your price, you have to do it incrementally, very slowly, because they'll take you off the buy box because you sold it cheaper at some point.
Listen, lowering your price, Nick, you know that it's the laziest lever that we can do. And I'm here for it. And I raise my hand as the lazy guy who's done it plenty of times, right? And that discount competitiveness is getting harder and harder and deeper, especially as we head into this holiday. Oh my God, we two holidays after coming up the influx of supply and demand with the pandemic, you're going to see a lot of discount pressures, I believe. But we got to get on to our focus tasks here.
To all my listeners, how would you like to boost your Amazon sales by up to 600%? That means you must have a winning product detail page. Mindful Goods crafts product pages that pop. Their creative marketers ensure your products aren't just another face in the crowd, but they stand out and sell. From SEO-optimized copy to scroll-stopping visuals, they've got your back. And for a limited time, my listeners get $100 off a brand story service. Elevate your Amazon game with Mindful Goods. Visit www.mindfulgoods.co/legends now and enter the code Amazon Legends to receive your $100 off. Yeah. Forecasting. So let's discuss the forecasting. How do you go about doing that?
First rule I have is that I use Amazon's forecasting, inventory forecasting planning, okay, as a check, but I do not trust it. In my opinion, over again, a long time and various things, I don't believe that their forecasting system is very good at all, and I don't trust it. It's one input that I look at, but again, this is also me because of retail. I look at weeks on hand. I look at what my sales are, and I look at my forecasted units that I think I'm going to sell of that unit. And I look at some historicals and I try to find the best guess of what I think is there. Because the way the machine works, the forecast machine, it doesn't account for like all these different variables that are controllables that the machine doesn't know. Weather, competitive set, price, promotion. It doesn't know. It's literally looking at sessions and that's it. So that's why you see it. Someday it goes, oh, you should send it 1,500. And then the next day you look on, it's like, no, 135. You haven't sent anything in, by the way. So I think it's one of the worst forecasting systems, honestly, in retail. And I can say that for first party vendor central as well. So I look at it because I'm interested in what the machine is telling me what the goods are. But I look at what I've sold per unit and forecasting from an inventory management. We do a very detailed buy ASIN per month unit forecast and actual. And I go in to see exactly what we sold the last month, the year. You have to, you know your business so you can control those things and try to decide what do I think the unit is. And then the second thing is, which leads to our cash flow, How am I going to flow those goods? This has changed dramatically in 3 years, how we flow the goods into Amazon, right? Into FBA. And if I'm doing fulfilled by merchant or what's the other word? MFN, merchant fulfilled network. Pick your acronym.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you've got two models, FBA, yes. FBM. That's it.
Yes.
Who is fulfilling it? If Amazon is fulfilling it, that's now there is a new thing. Well, not very new, but it's as we record this, it's beginning of September 2023. They are publicizing it now more, called Buy with Prime. So if you sell on your website, you can have Amazon fulfill it, but the mechanics... I mean, this has been around as multi-channel fulfillment, but now they have this Buy with Prime thing that has little tool. But let's stick to...
Yeah, let's stick, because we can do it. Don't get me going on Buy with Prime. I'm all in on Buy with Prime. I think it's this big announcement they made. I'm all in, but let's stay on track.
Yeah.
So a forecasting... When we say forecasting, it means a lot of things to a lot of people. So I'm going to start with inventory management. So forecasting what inventory I need to have at Amazon, for example, or that I'm going to fulfill with. I looked at it per item per month, and I try and build a database that shows me that I can know what I forecasted and then what I actually spent. Okay. Now, you also have to take in consideration, this is where the human brain and software can't figure it out. Well, I know I sold more because for various reasons, I was 10% off. Or my ad spend went out, or there's other things that happen. I had a competitor go down. I had to go down to fight, what have you. Take those things into consideration. But you need to know the unit. And then I look at, okay, I want to have 4 weeks on hand at Amazon. Okay. So if I sell X amount per week and I can look at the sales, I know I want to flow goods in. There's other considerations, right? LTV or LTL, do I get a better price per unit if I do a pallet versus a small parcel? These are things that everybody works through. But that is what I look at. I look at that. So for me, because again, I'm informed by my retail, one of the biggest things we have killed it, Nick, on inventory management is, especially since they've changed capacity manager, we're not constricted now as much on large, standard, and oversized. I tell my thing, so I used to do this before COVID, is I want to front load. If I'm a highly Q4, highly holiday item, by September 15th, October 5th, 6th at the latest, I've got all the goods in FBA to service my holiday. I am front loaded. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of sellers don't do that. A lot of sellers, because of cash flow, because of many different reasonable understandable reasons.
Delays, right?
They chase it every week. They send in orders every week. And you know what? They're out of stock a lot. And in Q4 and holiday, the absolute death spiral is being out of stock, right? You can't be out of stock. So, you know, the Captain Obvious, he who is in stock wins. You got to have all the other stuff. So I front load this in because I don't trust Amazon's timing. They're going from a national fulfillment network to a regional. It's still not worked out in all categories. It's gotten better in some and worse in others. Their catalogs is an absolute mess right now, their catalog system. So I want to put myself in a position on our clients into as big a cushion as I can. And when I look at shipping into September and selling in December, I calculate what my possible risk of storage fees would be. Typically, depending on what your margins are, I'd rather pay the 1% storage fee and get the sales than have to try and risk flowing it in and not getting it in time. So that's my inventory management forecasting.
So, okay. Ordinarily, you keep 4 weeks of inventory. That's what you are practicing?
Yes. And during seasonal times, I want a little bit more in there. But 4 weeks is really, 4 to 6 weeks is actually really steady because it accounts for all the receiving problems and everything else that could occur. Always measure risk, Nick. Always measure risk.
Okay. So let me share with you how I projected quantity sold. And you tell me what you think. So first of all, it's two scenarios. I have at least 1 year history or not.
Yep.
If you don't have 1 year history, crapshoot. especially if you are a seasonal product. So it kind of breaks down as, do you have 1 year data? Yes or no? And then you ask the same question under each one. Is this seasonal? Yes or no? So if it's not seasonal, you have 1 year data or not, it doesn't matter. So you can just simply, so what I do is I simply, if it's not seasonal, I just look at month over month over month. And then I have an average of the last, so I calculate usually all time, 90 day, 30 day, and 7 day average on daily basis. That gives me my daily sell-through rate, my average daily sell-through rate based on all time, 90 day, 30 day, and 7 day. And then you compare those, and then you take an average of those averages.
Yep.
So now you've got a fairly good example, and then you can check how your 7 day average compares to it. Is it going up or is it going down? If it's going up, if your 7 day average is higher than your average of averages, then clearly you are pushing up. So keep in mind, this is non-seasonal product.
Yes.
So, and then from that daily number, I calculate if you want 6 weeks, 12 weeks, if you want production replenishment, you do your math. So that takes care of the non-season. If it's seasonal, now we have more complicated approach. So what I do then is, let's assume we have 12 months of data. If you don't have 12 months of data, total crapshoot, you don't know. But if it's seasonal and you have 12 months of data, first of all, I look at the difference between this month, this year, versus this month, last year.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to add that. That is a critical thing that people do not know. Period. Apples to apples, because there could be more days. Holiday could start on a Friday or Saturday or Sunday. The days, comparing apples to apples, is critical.
Yeah. So now let's say that last year, today, I sold 12 pieces. This year, today, I sold, or yesterday, sold 18 pieces. 50% more, right? So tomorrow, I'm likely to sell 50% more than what I did last year. So that's one. Then what I do is I go back to last year, and then I look at the next 3 months in the last year compared to the past of last year. So if my next 3 months went up 10, 15, 20, 30% up, or it went down 10, 20, whatever, even though I am doing more this year than last year, the chances are now I have a trend that I'm going to do less. So that way you add the increase and then reduce it by whatever the drop is in the last year's numbers. That way I have an idea about what is likely to happen, and then I stock accordingly. Again, you do the average of averages, and then from that you draw. So what do you think about this approach?
I like your approach. I think it's sound logic. It's based upon data, but you're also putting some other factors into place. The thing we love and hate about Amazon is it changes all the time. So when you're looking at 1 year versus the other year, there could be other dynamics, right, that you have to consider in your thought process. This is just as every business, but things change move fast. You could have a new knockoff. You could have a new, there's a million things, right? What's your advertising?
You could have a pandemic.
What's your advertising? We don't understand. We don't know all the trends and do your thing. You get a PR hit that all of a sudden sends it through the roof. I mean, that's the fun of it, right? It's never boring. And it's always challenging. I like your methodology. I like your thought process. That's basically what I do. But my biggest thing is, are you either you're going to plan for success, right? Meaning I'm going to have enough goods in at Amazon to service the business. That's an old term as well. So everything's got to go around that. It is a flywheel, you know, pun intended, to make sure maybe last year your advertising spend wasn't as high, or your return on ad spend wasn't as high, or there were other, you weren't sending traffic off Amazon into Amazon. You didn't have an influencer program. To me, if I had my dream, Nick, it would be one screen that has my forecast by unit, by sales, has my advertising by sales, by unit, had every other factor, my discount, my competitive price, everything on one sheet to basically inform how I build out a forecast. You got that for me?
Yeah, actually, we do have that. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well,
you can sign up for our platform. It provides all this for you.
Good. I'm in.
All right. So let's cover the cash flow in the next couple of minutes. It's never enough, but at least let's give an idea. So now we know how many pieces we are going to sell. So therefore, we must stock up for. So how do you connect that to the cash flow?
Now, again, I don't know. You like scenario. I love your examples of what's my payment terms to the manufacturer. That's a factor. Whether you have to pay on nobody. I don't know. Nobody factors in, or nobody finances manufacturing as much as they used to these days, from what I understand. Is that still true?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're manufacturing in China, they want payment up front.
Exactly. So that's the one thing. So the biggest thing is the P&L we set out, the forecasting model that we just discussed will inform you of a cash flow. You can see your pure cash coming in and out of the business. And then you have to kind of go, when do I have to pay the piper? And am I going to be a squirrel and I make all my money in 3 months or 2 months, and I'm going to have to last for 8 months, 9 months. So if you have history, it's the scenario you talked about, right? It's great if you have cash flow history, because you can factor that in. The other thing is, who's financing a lot of it? And I talk a lot about, from an advertising side on Seller Central on Amazon, I can make an argument that there should be no spend budget if it's returning and doing everything and hitting every metric, right? I can make that argument, sure. The other thing is, they're typically financing your ad spend because it comes off your sales. It's not a check you are having to send. It's not an out-of-pocket expense. So if that still services the P&L, if it services your forecast, it serves all things, let them handle the cash flow. That's a big cash flow advantage. It really is. So then if you're borrowing on 30 days, or if you've got credit cards and you're rolling this stuff, you have to build out a projected forecast and then an actual of what your net at the EBITDA, if you want to use that, what the cash and what the cash flow is. And you want to put that out 12 months, 18 months. That's what I usually did. And you forecast it, and then you have to put the actual in, because it'll identify hiccups. It'll identify if there's going to be rough months. Then you can think through, okay, how do I try to protect myself against those lean months where the cash flow is going to be, it's just going to be what it is. It's just terrible. So you can plan for that.
So you want to hear my approach?
Yes, I'm dying.
This is very different.
Okay, very different. Sorry.
So this is what I do. So I say this. First of all, it all starts with what we covered at the beginning, above the line, below the line. We're not getting into below the line because they have fixed costs, your rent, whatever. So we're not getting into that. So we're looking at above the line. Above the line, let's assume that you've done your homework and you've achieved a good contract to negotiate your buying price, and you've got a good price on the item that you're selling it for and everything else. And then you have 20% net before the below the line items. 20% net you are achieving. So this is what I do. 20% translates into how much in dollars? Okay.
Right.
So I say, okay, how many units are you selling? So let's assume that you sell 1,000 units. Let's make it simple, per month, 1,000 units. What's your price point? Let's say that you've also done a good job on that and you priced it $50. Okay, same example, $50. So that means $10 you generated in cash, liquidity. Let's not get into below the line. That will consume a little bit of it, but let's keep it at for
you're making
simple.
Me nervous, Nick, but go ahead.
$10, okay, $10.
$10,
okay.
I got $10.
Now, you got $10 in your pocket. At the end of the month, you put $10 in your pocket. Now, 20% we said that we were going to buy it for. We paid $10 for the item as well. Okay? So, now, when you place your order, you're going to have to buy at least 4 months of inventory, right? So
yes.
That means
the minimum order quantity. Yes, minimum order quantity, MOQ.
So if you're going to have, so at the beginning of the month, by the end of which you're going to put $10 in your pocket, you have to have 5 months worth of inventory, right? That means $50 gone.
Yes.
This is how I plan projection. Take a look at your net dollar profit you're going to generate. And then multiply it by 1 divided by that net margin, in our case, 5 times.
Right.
Go back 5 times, plug that in your cash flow as outflow. Already you are negative because there's no money coming in yet.
No, right. You're, yes. So that, yes, go ahead.
So, and then you plug in everything else. Okay. Now month, if today is month zero, it's -5, month -5 is whatever that, in our case, $50. Month -5, -4, still $50. No money coming in yet. Minus, and then month zero end, it, that 50 becomes -40, then -30, -20. And then guess what? You now finish the first 5 months. And by the time, you know, you come to like month two, you have another 5 months worth ordering and then money going out. So you simply multiply it by that. And then that's what gives you your net cash requirement.
I like it. Now I've interviewed and talked to a bunch of sellers that have done very well. And I love asking this question. I know I've heard you talk about this before with a lot of your guests. When they start out, how many months did it take them before they stopped losing money?
Some of them don't have any idea. And you know what happens? This is what I say, that the worst thing that can happen to you is you get overwhelmed by your growth and you go bankrupt, because cash is king. If you are growing and you keep buying and you keep growing, you keep buying, that means that you are extending that 5 multiple we worked out to 6, 7, 8, 9. That means that you don't see positive cash flow for 12 months. By the way, for anybody who is looking to go into international marketplaces like Amazon Europe or anything else, it's 14 to 15 months before you see a penny, because you have to pay upfront VAT and things like that. So this is where people run out of money and say, I can't do this anymore.
100% exactly. It's a
They are making money and growing.
Exactly, because Nick, profit is still undefeated, as far as I can gather. Profit is undefeated, and if you understand your true profit centers and your metrics to deliver cash in your bank account, you will sustain it for a very long time.
Yeah,
And so that's a great, I like your logic. It depends on your terms, all these other things and what you're, how you're capitalizing and how you're actually financing it and what have you. But I like your multiple, the five multiple. And yes, most of the people I talk to, depending on the category of time, also the time that they started their businesses. I mean, don't tell me you started it in late 2020 and you grew, you know, and you were making money right away. Fine. That's a unicorn time period in e-commerce, right? And probably never.
Exactly.
Nine to 14 to 16 months is typically what I hear where they got their first dollar and that doesn't pay all the bills. It's just cleared a month where they didn't lose their butt.
Right. So, you know, two seasoned people, as you put it, we can go on all day long. two podcasters who like to talk, but we have to wrap up the business talk. And I want to move on to what my guests call the therapy session, where I get to know who Scott Ashman is. And I want to know what kind of life you've led up to this point. But I'm not interested in your bio in terms of your education and work, whatever. I want to know, when was the first time that you realized that you had interest in this kind of work?
As far as Amazon or just the entrepreneurial?
No. You're telling me... You were around, Amazon was around when you were a kid?
No. My father, I'm informed by my family. My father had his own business. He came from a family business that had been around for 100 years at that point. And that's all I knew, Nick. It's all I knew was my dad had his own company. And he grew that to a nice thing. And every conversation I interned for him, everything I knew was wrapped around the spirit.
What kind of business?
He was in the hide and really the hide business. So he would buy, he was a broker. So he would buy from the meatpacking houses, okay, on the phone in his office, and he would sell it to the tanneries. And over decades,
That business stinks.
You know that business?
Listen, I had a transportation company.
Oh, yeah.
I had trucks, trailers, I mentioned, and hide. You know, hide is, it categorized dangerous goods. You cannot just ship it easily. And it does smell up whatever. So every single truck that was, you know, a lot of carriers didn't want to touch it because it would stink up everything and they would have to go through. But we didn't mind. We specialized. So I know very well.
That business reminds me again a lot of the boon of the FBA aggregators where they went in and they just thought, and again, a lot of gotten a lot better. But back years ago, these FBA exclusive sellers, right? I didn't understand how they were making money because the hide business and that business was very similar. And you're absolutely right. It's not only is it a stinky business, it turned out it developed into not a very good business. So my dad kind of got out of it in a sense. Because they made all their money on tiny, tiny, tiny margins. They had to do massive volume to make a penny. Yeah. And the entire risk, and that's where he had to short, he had to long. It was a very high risk, high reward business. And if there was something wrong with the hides, then that screwed everything up. So I was just around that my whole life. You buy low, you sell high, you know, all of the trials and tribulations. He almost went bankrupt once. He got saved. He had his biggest supplier go bankrupt and he had to flip and all of these ups and downs and emotional roller coasters. That's all I grew up with. That's all I knew. I knew how to do somewhat exposed to accounting and all those things. In college, I had my own tie-dye t-shirt business. I was buying t-shirts and selling to the fraternities. I mean, I have always been doing something of buying something and selling something.
So it almost conditioned you for this fight for margins, right?
Yes. And then
it's in your DNA, so to speak.
Yes. And then I was extraordinarily lucky in 1995. I started working with the big brand. I got as a sub rep as the young guy for JanSport backpacks. And the greatest lesson I learned there was we sold everybody, Nick. We were in JCPenney's. We were in specialty outdoor stores. I mean, it was a backpack. And it was my first foray into a highly intensive seasonal business. back to school. We had 6 weeks, almost 4 weeks sometimes, depending on part of the country, to make all of our money for the entire year. So that education of 70% of your revenue for the year comes in 6 weeks. That puts strains on every piece of the process and the supply and everyone, right? And we sold sporting goods. We sold everybody. And back then there was a million more sporting goods stores and all kinds of stores. And then so that's my first thing, learning the retail business and understanding margin, understanding cost per square inch, understanding the classic version of merchandising and how to be a great merchant. You make your money on the buy.
Yeah. But you know, this doesn't always work. I'm interested in what was it that you realized or made you realize that you really were interested. What I'm talking about is my entire family, they're all doctors, okay? Both mother's side, father's side, and the few that were not doctors, their kids became doctors. I did not want to have anything to do with medicine. So growing up, and I was a good student, and everybody would look to me as the next doctor in the family. And in fact, my mother was even talking about, you know, making sure that her, because she had private practice and then all her stuff, I want to keep this ready for you, and because you don't have to go buy it. And that's how it was.
Yeah.
All the way up to like around the middle of high school years, it's like I'm the next doctor. And bang, overnight, I realized I don't want this.
Well, my
in your case, you went along with the trend. So my question to you is, when was it that you realized that I really want to embrace this? This is me. I want to do this.
Yeah, well, when I was 13 and I was heavily involved in theater and I was doing videos and doing stuff, I wanted to get into television or film or whatever. I was obsessed with that until all my internships were in LA. I was a guy with a plan. I had a plan. I had these incredible things. I went to Arizona State, and that was another, I didn't really go there to study film or whatever, but get communications. And I was obsessed. And then I graduated. I went and worked in Hollywood for 9 months and said, this is horrible. I hate it. And all of a sudden, every dream I ever had since I was 12, 13 years old, crushed. Met my wife. Her mother-in-law was in the rep business and the outdoor business. So like REI and like climbing, hiking, you know, those kind of things. So she introduced me to the JanSport guy. And so I was doing sales. I was selling laundry. I was lost. I just knew that people was my, you know, that's my superpower. And so I have a performative side because I love to perform. That's why the podcast is fun. And I do play-by-play and all the other stuff. And that really, learning the business, I sub-rep for the incredible, that was my MBA. I mean, JanSport, then I learned the apparel business from her. She had big apparel lines. And I had another guy she knew who had huge footwear lines, you know, Rockport and Merrill and all these things. So I, all of a sudden, I started to understand, I almost have sold almost every category you can think of. And that's where I just found the relationships and people. And that's what we say on our always off brand all the time, is people matter. And that's at the core, what I was selling, what I was doing. I wanted to enjoy it. I wanted to like it. I like the outdoor business. I like footwear. I love apparel, all those things, tents and sleeping bags, but it was about the people and developing relationships and trust about the people. And that's what I loved about the agency business is, you know what, trying to think like a brand. And so that's what I do today, and that's what I love. I always think like a brand, and if we're making money or not.
So you were interested in film, and as yet you grew up in an entrepreneurial family, businesses. So when you wanted to pursue your interest in film, did you get any reaction or anything?
No,
to encourage, discourage?
Yeah, after that 9 months and I was discouraged, I moved back. I actually had my own first production company called Out of LA Productions, where I sold video production services, which I had no idea what I was doing. I had a buddy who was good with it. No idea. One of the people we sold, we created this whole video, was Swift Transportation, because I was in Phoenix. Oh. You know Swift. So then I learned a great hard lesson of profit and loss, because I'd spent, talk about cash flow. Exactly. I got this business and I spent all the money before I got all the checks in. And so I ran out of money. So I was lost. I was just knew I was good with people and I didn't really know what I was going to do.
So did your family give any feedback to what they wanted you to do or anything?
No, I mean, I worked for my father for 1 week and I decided I liked my father too much to work with him, because I just knew I would not like him if we worked together. I mean, he's long passed away now, but I had to move back. I grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I'd have to move back to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which I, at the time, I wasn't interested in. I was just newly married. I needed a job. So I got a job in sales selling laundry services. And that actually, and I'll land the plane here. They sent us to all this training, like actual sales training, all the different steps and all the different things. Cause I was cold calling that's my job, was cold calling. I got 99% no. I hated it, but it was probably the best thing I could ever do for my career. Cause I learned so much about relationships, about how to build trust and rapport and all that stuff.
So, you know, there's a couple of things that come to me about your experience. And one is, people hate the experience of doing boot camps, military or whatever. And, you know, at the time they suffer and then they're never happy. But you know what? They always talk about it proudly.
Yep.
Nobody bashes those days. They all talk about it proudly. Number one. Number two, it almost like you the life kind of puts you from one place to the other, and then you go with it, and you don't know at the time, you're just running with it, and you don't actually know that, you don't realize at least that you are actually being conditioned for something. And what I'm hearing from you is you have been conditioned to be in this space where you're dealing, and look what we're talking about. We're talking about margins and how to truly calculate. You've been conditioned all your life to manage the numbers for survival, right? That's ultimately what Amazon is about.
This is a true story. My mother-in-law was friends with the JanSport rep. Okay, I got in contact. He was looking for somebody, but not at the time. So I was real, for some reason, early on, I was really infatuated with computers and I was pretty decent at computers and I liked it. I liked all the technical stuff. So for 2.5 years, this is true, I would call him every month. Back time, we didn't have cell phones. I would leave a voicemail. I bugged him. I was friendly, but I was pleasantly persistent. And finally, he learned from my mother-in-law in a conversation in a parking lot that I was good with computers. And he goes, great, can you do all these Excel spreadsheets for me and everything for his business? So for the next year and a half, I did all that while I was working at the laundry company and doing all this other stuff. And then finally, he hired me. That leads to, in 2004, I'm working at JanSport. I get the big call up, Nick, to North Face. At the time, they are giants. And I was learning in key account management. So I'm going to be the guy. I'm the key account manager for REI, which is a ginormous business for North Face. Okay? Division of our agency, all of that stuff. If I wouldn't have gotten interested in that, you wouldn't be talking to me today. Yeah. So I complain and bitch and moan about Amazon more than anybody every day. But you know what? It has given me a tremendous living, a phenomenal life, and it's because I had that one interest back in the day. I was just nerdy enough to go, you know, I love data and I love people. And if I could put those together, it turned out, and I had an idea this Amazon thing was going to be pretty big.
Well, listen, things happen for a reason. And you just have to, you know, I learned, I tell you a quick story of mine. I'm looking to get into college, and then where I grew up in Turkey, there's a centralized exam and you have to take it. Oh, 500,000 people those days took it every year. And only 50,000 could get it because not everybody can go to, there's no room, there's no class, university, whatever. So anyway, I studied for a year and a half. And the day after the test, now I'm a high school graduate, just took the exam. I don't know what's going to happen, whether I'm going to get into college. And there is nothing in my life, completely empty. And I started to become depressed and I started to question how well I did. And I was one of the top students, and I started to question, oh my God. So as soon as I came out of the exam, they asked me, how did you do? I said, oh, great. I did great on this grade. I'm going to do great. And then the doubt started to sink in. And my grandfather and I had a special relationship. And he said to me, listen, don't worry. Nobody else could have studied harder than you did.
Yeah.
You have no regrets, no matter what. So yeah. I took that to heart. And to this day, whatever I'm pursuing, I put in 100% because I don't want to look back and say, I wonder if I had done this, would I have had this, and should I have, or would I? I don't want to play that what if game. So I put in 110% into whatever I'm doing, whether it's podcast, people I meet, Amazon, you name it. And you know what? When you do that, things come your way.
Absolutely.
At least whatever is potentially able to come your way will come your way, and then you will catch it. And that's what looks like you've done. So these stories are great stories, and
yeah,
I love
not to. I again, it's easy to listen to this and think, oh wow, but I had a lot of rough times, and I hit bottom a couple times with my own business. And so don't think that you hear this guy and, oh God, he worked for these big brands and blah, blah, blah. No, there were deep valleys I got myself into, various points, and had to pull myself out. I'm very grateful.
Well, great stories. So tell us, Scott, how can people reach you, benefit from your wealth of knowledge?
Yeah, I don't know much wealth, but LinkedIn, obviously, LinkedIn is probably the best place. Just full name. And last name is weird. It's spelled Ohsman, but it's pronounced Oshman. It should be Osman, but you'll have all that in your great show notes and everything else. LinkedIn is pretty much the key. You can go to quickfirenow.com and check us out there and find me there. I'm on Twitter, which used to be Twitter. It's now X or whatever. Just my name. Instagram, same thing. Pretty easy. If you know how to spell my last name, Nick, you're in.
Well, I know your last name very well. So, and many people will do after today. So thank you, Scott. Thank you for being here. And thank you for sharing great stories.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick. Appreciate you.
Before I wrap up, I want to remind everyone to visit www.cellcore.co/legends and mention Amazon Legends to get a free comprehensive audit and a $500 statement credit. It's time to conquer Walmart with Cellcore by your side. Also, don't forget to get your winning product detail page from mindfulgoods.co and get up to 600% boost in your sales. You will get $100 off the service. Visit www.mindfulgoods.co/legends and enter the code Amazon Legends to enjoy your $100 off. And this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you in the next one.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.